Hello and welcome into episode 63 of the Calcio Connection podcast, connecting with you Italian football fans from all over the world. In this episode, we're going to focus on recapping Lazio and Inter, their 1-1 draw over the weekend, and also kind of close out the transfer markets for those two clubs now that a really just chaotic, sometimes fun, sometimes not so fun, depending on what clubs you root for around Europe, transfer market has come to an end. I'm Alex Dono alongside, as always, Jerry Mancini. Jerry, how are you?
Fantastic. Can't complain. We somehow managed to draw this weekend. I'll take it. Could have been worse. 55 minutes of Inter, I would say, not dominating, but controlling most of the play. And then their two wasted chances in the second half kind of turned the script for Lazio. And they, our boy Milinkovic-Savic always turning up against Inter.
I knew he would score.
Guy owns you. In the last five games, he has three goals. Two have been game winners. I remember the one he scored for his mother. I believe it was for her birthday at the San Siro two seasons ago. And he went right. All the same goals, similar. Two by the post, twice. And then last year, when he, was it similar last year as well? He scored? Or I don't remember last year's goal.
I don't remember what the goal looked like, but he did score last year against for sure.
But what can you say? He's Mr. Clutch, I'm calling him now, because he steps up against the biggest clubs. Juventus last year, he stepped up. Like Atalanta when it was Coppa Italia. Like, I know he doesn't get the 30 goals like Immobile, but you got to give him credit. He scores against the biggest opponents.
Absolutely. Let's welcome in our special guest for this episode. You guys know him and love him. Does a fantastic job covering Lazio. He's the founder of the Laziali, Stephen K. Moore, who's making at least his third appearance. Stephen, how you doing, sir?
Not too bad, Alex and Jerry. Doing well.
You know, Stephen, Jerry was just talking a little bit about the match, and in a couple minutes I'll give you my negatives and my positive from an Inter point of view, but that felt like the sort of match where I think both fan bases, whether you support Inter or Lazio, can be a little bit disappointed not to get more. I mean, maybe at the end of the day, a little bit relieved that you share the points and nobody left the Olimpico with nothing. But I don't know. I think both teams really had their chances to get the game-winning goal and didn't. How did you feel about it?
Yeah, kind of on the same point of that. At the end of the day, we'll take the 1 point just due to the way that match kind of panned out. I'm not too sure what the medical staff was doing or how we prepared for the game. It kind of seemed like, I know for sure Correa and Radu didn't train 2 days beforehand due to the injuries that they picked up in the previous match. So throwing them into the game, I expected them both to pick up an injury just like we've done in the past where we're throwing players into a game when they're injured and hoping that they provide a miracle in the first half and then we sub them off. But as you saw, Radu got subbed off. We put Bassos in, but Bassos has been someone who we're trying to get rid of, but now we brought him back in, and then he got injured at the end of the second half, and we had that Pirlo plays a center back, which just caps off the whole kind of summer transfer window failures, I guess you can say, because that's one of the main things that I think I'll touch upon later, is just we didn't reinforce the back end deep enough. But I think Inter, out of the two sides, had the bigger chance to close the game and secure the 3 points. I think at the start of the second half, Lukaku had that chance to just miss wide. Brozovic at the end of the second half hit the post. But overall, I think it was definitely good for each of them to secure a point. But I was even saying there, I was watching the game with my Nono, and I said, watch, just they're going to get a penalty in the last minute. Something's going to happen. As I'm saying that, they hit the post right away. I see that shot trickle, and it's just slowly going towards the net, right? So I think Inter should be more upset, especially because of not taking advantage of the opportunities that they had. We were playing Marco Pirlo on center back, right? So
yeah,
should have capitalized on that a lot more. Nothing against Marco Pirlo, because he did do a good job, which I was even astounded by, but yeah.
Jerry, to build on that point, did you think Inter should be the side more frustrated? How did you feel coming out of it?
100%. It was amazing how much depth and how much money you guys spend, and yet you still can't beat Lazio. Like that's what it comes down to. You guys bring in Sensi off the bench. Who else came off the bench? Was it Brozovic, Alexis? How much did it cost your subs compared to our subs? Like, I would love to know.
Eight of your starters are our subs. Yeah.
We bring on Atpa Akpro, who came from our from Serie B, Salentania, and the guy looked like a stud. His footwork is amazing. His movement's amazing, and people are saying, well, he's 28 and he's already past his prime. No, I don't buy that. A lot of people have to remember, this is a guy who had an injury that set back his career for who knows how many seasons. And he was on, had a lot of promise from Toulouse. So we got a guy now with, could be like a Sergei Milinkovic-Savage type deal where he ends up being worth $80 million maybe down the road. I know I'm going crazy here right now, but in the short term, he looks like a very good player, and he made a difference off the bench. Now, as for Gonzalo Escalante, when he came off the bench, I didn't see that much from him, but sometimes that's not always a bad thing. Maybe he's just playing a simple game, and it's better not to notice anything than to notice something. So overall, I think that Inter hurt themselves. I don't know why Barella is playing in a more of an attacking midfielder when that.
I didn't not like his, that either.
I don't know why he's playing there.
That was odd.
And you got Brozovic and you got Eriksen on the bench, and you're starting Gagliardini. Like, I don't get it. I don't think that Gagliardini was bad on Sunday. I thought he actually
had one of his better games, to be honest. Like, and you guys both know I complain about that guy a ton, but I couldn't really complain after that match.
But Vidal, aside from his bullshit he did with the we'll get to that later. But I saw a clip on Twitter, like, he actually dominated the midfield. And now we know why Antonio Conte wanted this guy. Why he brought him to Inter. He's not just a short term. He's a few years, and he'll give some stability in that midfield. And personally, that leads to the exit of Eriksen, I believe. Him or Brozovic are gone this season.
I hope it's Brozovic. And I know that Eriksen is, he gets shit on by the Italian media all the time. I think some of it's a little bit unfair. Brozovic, I've seen him peak with Inter, and I know he actually, ironically enough, is a couple of years younger than Eriksen, but he's been at the club a lot longer. I don't think that he really fits as well with this formation now that Conte has tweaked it to more of a 3-4-1-2. Which is usually what they line up in rather than the 3-5-2. So he's clearly adjusted the formation. I think the 3-5-2 is much better for Brozovic and the 3-4-1-2 not as much. But I want to get to the red cards in a moment. First, from an Inter point of view, I wrote down my list of negatives and positives from this match. And I thought Jerry actually astutely hit on a couple of these. First couple things for me. Ivan Perisic is not a left wing back. He's a winger, doesn't fit this formation. He struggled defensively. He had a hell of a tough matchup against your guy Lazzari, who he really struggled with. Perisic, by the way, was sleeping on that Milinkovic-Savic goal. I hold him very much responsible for that. Also, Samir Handanovic, I thought, could have reacted quicker and could have covered that near post better than he did. That was a little bit problematic. Overall, Inter was not clinical enough, didn't have the necessary attitude to take over. I think, Steven, you touched on it, that when they played for 17 minutes with the man advantage, I didn't see the intensity ramp up whatsoever. They actually had better opportunities at 11 versus 11 and 10 versus 10 than they did at 11 versus 10. So that was a little bit troublesome. Steven also touched on early in the second half, Lukaku and Lautaro also had some chances to score that could have given Inter a 2-0 lead on a second half goal. They couldn't do it, so not clinical enough. Also, in the second half, Brozovic had that deflected shot that, you know, had Strakosha beaten because of the deflection, but a little bit unlucky for Inter and lucky for Lazio that it went off the post instead of, you know, nicking the near part of the post where it could have been a goal. You know, Stefano Sensi, we're going to get more into the red cards, but it was pretty stupid the way that he raised his hand the way that he did to get sent off. I thought it was a little bit harsh, but he still needed to control his emotions there. Jerry touched on this. Inter substitutes did not have nearly the impact in this match than they had in the Fiorentina match a week prior. But I do credit Lazio, by the way, on that. And I thought that something that Lazio did well defensively with how they were compact, they really forced a lot of Inter's attacks to the wings. So I thought maybe Inter could have been a little bit more assertive centrally, but they really allowed Lazio to force their attacks wide, and the crosses just weren't paying off. So those are my negatives. On my positives, I thought Milan Skriniar had one of his best games under Conte, and so it worked out pretty well that he didn't end up leaving the club when, you know, a few days before that he looked destined to go to Tottenham, but he ends up staying. So I want to continue to see him grow in this formation. Jerry, you touched on Arturo Vidal. I thought he was an absolute warrior. I was covering a ton of grass, making important tackles to regain possession, distributing the ball very well in the attack. So like you said, you can see why Conte was so desperate to get this guy for like the two previous transfer windows before he finally came. I thought Lautaro was very good, especially in the first half. He scored the goal. He seems to have gotten over a lot of those mental struggles that he had, you know, at the end of last season. I gave Perisic a big negative defensively, but in the attack, he is dangerous. He did assist the Lautaro goal. We know what he can do in the offensive phase. It's just the defensive phase where he struggles. And finally, even though I'm disappointed with the result, I'm still going to say that taking a point on the road at Lazio is a positive. I mean, it's a tough place to win on the road at the Olimpico, whether it's Roma or Lazio, especially Lazio. So I will take that as a positive as well. So I want to get to the red cards, because there were two of them in this match, both in the second half. It was Ciro Immobile sent off in the 69th minute, Stefano Sensi sent off in the 86th minute. We'll start with Ciro, and Steven, I want your take on this. I can understand why a lot of Laziali were upset, because it clearly was provoked with Vidal pushing him. I give my Chilean agitator some credit for that, but what did you think about that straight red?
I think, first off, when I saw the red, I thought it was for Vidal.
Before
I noticed anything, when I kind of went back into detail, then I saw lots of players kind of getting aggravated, and I knew that. I was like, oh, wait a minute, it's Immobile got the red card. Obviously, at first, I thought Vidal's diving, he's on the floor, it's going to go to VAR, it's going to get revoked. Then, obviously, you see his hand come up and lightly kind of brush his face, and then looked like he was going for his shirt. In my opinion, he was turning around after he'd been, because most people said, oh, Vidal just went up to him, he didn't even touch him. But if you watch the replay, they went up to Vidal, or Vidal went up to Immobile and gave him that kind of push, like get up sort of thing. And he turned around and went to go grab him, it looked like. But on the way up, it hit his face. So I think the way, like why it's only a one game match ban is because the ref probably thought it was a lot worse than that. And he didn't get to review it for the second time. So I think that it was a little harsh. I think a yellow card for both would have been a good just call. I know, like, I think Immobile may have even dived off the video replay. I haven't looked at it too close in detail past that. I was more so concerned with Vidal, but it didn't look like he had hit him, although it was a rash tackle from behind. And if he did hit him, it would have definitely been a red card, because there's no need for him to go in like that in the middle of the park like that. But I think a yellow card for both would have been just that. I don't agree with the whole lightly brushing face red card deal, and we'll kind of even get into that with the whole Patrick ordeal as well. Obviously, I think the ref wanted to even the playing field on both sides, which is why he gave it to him. But
I agree completely.
I don't know. Like, we've seen Patrick do some stupid things, I guess you can say, biting last year and now doing this. Like, I just don't like the whole thing where we drop to other teams' level and copy those players like Vidal, like laughing as he goes off, as he's getting booed sort of thing. Like, I don't know. Just didn't seem too right. But yeah, I think a yellow would have been a best case scenario for both players. I think the red was kind of unjust to Immobile right off the start.
Yeah, and I thought the Sensi sending off, I thought, was even more harsh. But I don't think that happens if Immobile hadn't been sent off. I thought it was kind of a makeup call. What did you think of all that, Jerry?
Oh, I'm with Patrick. I do that. If I was a football player, I would do the same thing. If the referee is going to stoop to that level, and they're going to give you a red card for I believe he said it, like, if the referee's going to play that game, I'm going to play that at that level as well. So he got his team back at 10 apiece, and I don't think that Patrick wants to go to that level in a game like that. But when he sees that, if the referee's going to allow that, a guy like Patrick, who has shown to be able to do this kind of crap, he did it, and credit to him. I know we don't want to be that kind of team that stoops to that level, but sometimes you're forced to play that hand, because if the referee's not going to officiate the game properly, then you have to play the game in a different way, I guess. You don't want to play that level. I don't think Patrick wants to play at that level. And you're right, Alex. It doesn't get provoked in that way if the referee controls the game from the beginning. Like, I was listening to Lazio Lounge, and they said a good point. The first 30 minutes, there's not even a card, no fouls, nothing's going on. After the 30th minute, there's cards everywhere.
Yeah.
It just turned out of nowhere, and like, there's cards there. It's a free-for-all, but the referee is just, I don't know, Here's my perception on referees. You either have a good referee that is willing to manage the game properly, or sometimes his ego gets in the way, and it's like he's like so authoritative, like he has to take control and it's his way. And then during the game, you see a lot of the times before he actually starts giving the card that he points to himself. He's like, I'm in control of this game. I'm controlling this game. You listen to me. And both sides, he tells them, you listen to me. I make the decision, not you guys. So it's like as the game progresses, his persona starts to change and he just becomes like this angry guy that has to just lash out cards for no reason. And then on top of that, why doesn't either of these decisions go to VAR, like to the actual screen where the actual referee can review it and see if it's deemed a red card or not? Like, I know that all plays go, all red cards and goals in the box go straight to VAR, but sometimes these decisions should be reviewed by the referee and say, okay, maybe you should check this out, see if your decision was a little too rash, too harsh, so he can see and he can make the call. That's the only thing I didn't like, is that this should have gone to the screen. He should have gone, check it out, see what it was, and I think that he would have rescinded the red card had he actually checked to see his decision. I think it both would have been a yellow, and he would have revoked the red card. But at the end of the day, it is what it is. Now, Lazio has to play without Immobile. Inter has to play without Sensi. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think this is a win. Not a win, but not a loss. But it gives Immobile an extra 2 days to rest now for our first Champions League match. And we don't overuse him, exert him. Knowing Inzaghi, he probably would have started him on the Saturday and then on the Tuesday. So,
Think about Stefan de Vrij, Alex. What did you think about his game? I feel like he made – every time there was a foul, I saw him was the one running away on Correa. There was at least three.
Yes.
I found that very surprising as well. I had to go double-check that if I wasn't mistaken, but I didn't see him pick up a yellow at all. So it was like the ref was giving a little nice card pass to him.
And by the way, was this the first or the second time that de Vrij has actually played against Lazio? Because he usually picks up like a mysterious knock and is held out of this game. I don't know if he just hasn't really cleared the whole Lazio hurdle mentally, how his time ended there. But I think this might be the second time he's played against Lazio. But the third season with Inter, he usually conveniently misses that match.
Yeah, very interesting as well. And I think, like, even so, the fans aren't there, right? So there is a minimal amount of fans. It's not compared to what the Olympico or wherever the case may be that he's going to, right? I think he'd be jeered a lot more, especially in that case, in that match where he's drawing all those fouls. I think that crowd would have been more on him, but it looks like, oh, no fans, no one to kind of get on my back, so sure, I'll play this game. But he's definitely been one of the best players on Inter without a doubt in recent years.
Oh, yeah, he's been I almost feel bad for sounding like I'm trashing the guy a little bit, because I couldn't be happier with how de Vrij has done. And like I said in my negatives and positives, I thought Skriniar played very well in this match, which I was really happy to see, because he's not exactly found a home in Conte's formation till this point, so hopefully that's a sign of things to come.
I think he's hurt, Alex. I honestly think he picked up an injury during that game, because near the end, near the quarter, like the last quarter, he's holding his heel. Like, he gets clipped from behind, and
I didn't notice that.
He didn't come off, but he didn't look like himself. So if you go look at the game again, they talk about if he was going to come off or not, but he does get clipped in the heel, and it kind of looked like he was limping a little bit as well. So I'm just curious to see if that takes into effect into the next game, or if there's any time he'll miss. But that's something I kind of picked up on during the game. So,
well, that would just tell me that the international break is coming at the right time, right? Because he's going to have, you know, the extra week to heal up. I want to get to the transfer window with you guys, because I've really heard a lot of Jerry's opinions, positive and negative, on Lazio's transfer window. I'd love, Steven, to get yours as well. So I'll start with you. Some of the big positives and negatives you see from the transfer window now that the deadline has passed. And if you can give a letter grade to Lazio's transfer window, I'd love to hear it. And I think we should all probably grade our clubs on the curve, knowing that, you know, very few teams had like their full financial resource with the pandemic. So I think we should probably take that into account. But how'd you feel about it, Steve?
I think overall I'd give Lazio's incoming, outgoing whole transfer window for the summer between a 6.5 and a 7, more so towards a 6.5 range. I think that the big marketing scheme, the big plan, the big idea to get one of those big name signings, which was definitely what I thought was going to be the case finally this year, was to get the David Silva deal across the line. I think when that fell apart, they kind of went into scrambles. I think it was a lot of, oh, we're going to get Kumbula, we're going to get this player, we're going to get this player, we're going to get this player. And it seemed like we were just linked with, it's probably the same with every club, but it seemed like we were realistically linked with at least 30 players for each kind of position, it felt like. And none of the deals were these big top name players where it was like, oh, we're going into the Champions League, we're going to get someone with experience. You look at our team, there's not a lot of experience when you go into European competition, especially in UEFA Champions League. And UEFA Europa League, we've been there quite a bit for the past few seasons. So we have a bunch of those players who have that experience. But Champions League, I think Lucas Leiva was one of the only few in the team who's been there and played at that level. So I was definitely expecting someone, whatever position the case may be. We definitely needed a second striker. We needed another striker. We needed a midfielder. We needed someone on defense. We needed someone to reinforce the left flank. We needed all these different positions to be fulfilled. And while most of them did get fulfilled, the back line was not. So in addition to that big name signing not being signed at the end of the day, we didn't reinforce the back line good enough. Someone like Hoed, who I was surprised even made a return, because we don't usually take players back after they've had their first spell at the club, but I guess they wanted to give him another chance to do what he's been saying since he's left the club. I don't think that he's kind of the name that's going to progress us forward. He's been playing with Southampton and he couldn't even get a consistent role at the team. What if people want to say it's the manager, people want to say it's the league, whatever the case may be, but he's been out on loan for the past few seasons. Let's say he played well in Belgium. We've seen Denis Vavro come from Slovakia. Most people thought, oh, he's the next big thing. He plays with Skriniar on the national team. Look how he's kind of adapted here, right? So although Hoed's got used to Lazio, he's been playing for Lazio in the past, I don't think that that's the right move to move into the Champions League and be able to compete on that level, Serie A and the Coppa Italia, all three of them, with the current backline that we have. So I think there's definitely an absence still with regards to that backline, and we saw it against Inter. It took full effect. Of course, Hoed wasn't there, so maybe he gets subbed on instead of Parolo in that last minute. But if you look at our starting back line, we have Luis Felipe when he's match fit, Francesco Acerbi, and Stefan Radu. I'm okay with that. I don't think it's one of the best in the league. I don't think it's one of the best in Europe. It's okay to kind of get through these competitions. But when you have Radu, who's aging and picking up injuries, like we saw against Inter, when we have Luis Felipe, who makes a lot of mistakes, and he's also getting injured on and off at least 2-3 times a season, you have that inconsistency in the back line. And we're having to play players like Patrick, who were no names on the team 4 or 5 years ago, and he's been forced to adapt to a new position. And we are going to have to bring in Hoed on the left side too now. So it kind of seems like Acerbi's that central role, and he's definitely the solid player in the back line. And then we're looking for two other players to kind of fulfill those roles permanently, but we haven't been able to do it. So that's why I think the overall window was closer to a 6.5 than a 7. Mm. I think there's those two different points to the transfer window that we should have done better.
I think that's a good shout. I think on the positive side, you know, obviously you want to have more depth at center back, but I think in Lazio's case, the balance between the midfield and the back line is so good that, you know, I think you guys in certain situations, maybe not against like a top tier Champions League side, but in a lot of situations, you can get away with maybe one weak link in the back three, as long as the balance in the midfield is so solid, because you're not going to really expose somebody. But Jerry, your take on the transfer window, because you tend to be more optimistic than most. And if you can give it a grade from 1 to 10.
I'm happy with the transfer market. We got a striker that everyone complained about. We didn't have that Vici Mobley. So we spent 20 million on Vedat Morici. And apparently he's been praised. He's really good out of the Turkish league. So we're going to see what he turns out to be. And then we got Mohamed Fares, who's young, has a lot of upside, didn't come cheap. 10 million is not cheap for Lazio. So you fill the left wing back. We have Marisic, who can play left and right side. So that helps as well. And then in the midfield, bringing in a guy like Andres Pereira. And I know that he's on loan, but who knows? Who's not to say that if he has a superb season, he does work out well for Lazio, that they don't sign him. I wouldn't rule that out. Don't be surprised if Lotito pulls the trigger and does sign him. But you got someone who can replace Luis Alberto off the bench. You got a guy like Akpro who can come in and maybe sub off Milinkovic-Savic, say, or Lucas Leiva. And even Escalante gives you an option for Lucas Leiva or whoever whatever situation you're in, right? So you got three midfielders and that came in, and we didn't have that last year. We had to rely on Danilo Cataldi, which I don't have an issue with, but you don't want him to be your first option, I preferably believe, but he does need time to grow. We were just always depending on Marco Parolo. Every game, Marco Parolo, Marco Parolo, Marco Parolo, and he's not young, he's 35. And now that leads us to the back end. And yes, we could have gotten a defender. We could have got Marish Kambula. And we get Kambula, we spend 30 million. All of a sudden, we're not spending 20 million on a striker. We're spending 30 million. That's an extra 10 million. Who's to say all of a sudden we don't get Fares on the left side? The whole mercato can change all because of one expensive signing. So if David Silva comes in, does the mercato still go out the way it happened now? There's a lot of ifs. Now, I know that Wesley Hoed, I don't know exactly how to pronounce it, Hodet or Hoed, but...
Yeah, it's a weird one.
Yeah. and I know people are going to say, well, his first time wasn't bad. It wasn't great. But he does come off a really good season in the Belgian league. And I think that's a lot of promise. Yeah, maybe it didn't work out with him for Southampton. But in regards to Southampton, they're not a good team at all. He's not playing with good players in Southampton. At that time, they're just a bottom feeder team who just barely survives in the EPL. And the transition from Serie A to EPL, for some players, they can't handle that transition, that speed, the fast game. And maybe a guy like Wesley, who comes back to Serie A, and even said on his Instagram that he regrets leaving and loves being, like, he's happy to be playing for Lazio. I would take a player who wants to play for Lazio as opposed to a player who doesn't. So I think that's really encouraging. You want people to play for your club. I think that you get that momentum, that motivation, that love, and that's something that really transpires onto the field. Now, I know he's no high-caliber defender, but we do have Luis Felipe, who's going to come back from injury. We do have Radu, but I think that, personally, if Simone Inzaghi is very smart, he rotates his center backs efficiently, not just throw Radu on Sunday in that predicament. Maybe Basto should have started from the beginning. I don't know. But who knows? Who's to say if he would have lasted the whole half? But I think the biggest question mark here is Dennis Vavro. And you said that he came from the Danish league into the Serie A and it didn't pan out. But this is a guy who we spent a lot of money on. He didn't come cheap last season. Came over 10 million plus wages, and they worked really hard to get him. He had a high ceiling, high potential, and maybe the staff were thinking, okay, we need to see what we can get out of this guy now. Why are we going to spend another 20 million for another defender when we're spending X amount for Dennis Vavro?
Yeah.
And that's a very important question here, is that you don't want to go spend more money on top of for another defender when we don't even know what we have in Dennis Vavro. How many games did he play last year? Maybe a handful? We need to see what this guy can do. And I think they did it right. They put him on the Serie A schedule, on the Serie A roster, because the competition is not as strong. And I don't think you want to put Vavro in a Champions League competition yet, because he's not at that level maybe. But you said a good point that there's players maybe you can get away with that they can play in Champions League, but whereas Serie A, a guy like Dennis Vavro can get away with maybe with mistakes against a Spezia, a Crotone. And then this is where I think the biggest factor comes in for Lazio. We have a squad that has more depth than last season. We have filled a lot of positions. We even kept Caicedo. We have four strikers. I don't even think we had four strikers last year that can rotate up front. That is huge. Four strikers that now all of a sudden we're not relying on Caicedo every week or a Correa every week. Now Inzaghi has the ability to rotate his roster in certain areas. And the biggest question is he needs to rotate his center backs. He needs to have more confidence in Dennis Vavro. And even Nicolo Armini is another shell. Let him play against lower clubs. See what he can do against the lower echelon clubs, like the lower tiers. And that's where you're able to balance your lineup. Not, I remember last year against Ball when we lost, we had our best players playing. And then 4 days later, we had our first Europa League game. Why are we playing our best 11? And then 5 days later, 3 days later, you have another game. And then on top of that, the same lineup the weekend after. Then after five games, you already killed your team. So I do agree with you, Steve, that our center back situation is not, it's not great, but it's not bad either. You have Marco Parolo in emergencies who can prove to play if needed, and has shown that defensive side. And then the last thing I want to say is that a lot of people are on Twitter are saying, why not Lucas Leiva? I would never, ever want Lucas Leiva back there. That guy there is a liability. He's a good midfielder. Timely challenges most of the time, but he's could be reckless. But he takes way too many chances, and a guy like Marco Parolo proves that he's very tactically smart, intelligent, understands the game, and he knows how to cover his space. So, yeah, again,
my whole thing is we didn't reinforce the team good enough to compete for a top four spot and at Champions League level. That's my whole thing is if you look at the other teams in Serie A, you look at the Milan, you look at Inter, you look at Napoli, Juventus, all these top tier teams, even Atalanta, we don't have a defensive lineup that compares to them. So when you put pen on paper, you look at the lineups, yeah, okay, maybe we can fare this season. We can maybe push for that fourth position spot. But realistically, I personally don't see Lazio finishing in top four this year, without a doubt. Maybe some miracle happens. I know that we have more reinforcements coming off the bench that hopefully will be better than what we had in the past. But who doesn't say we pick up, Avoy picks up an injury. If Luis Alberto picks up an injury, Markovic picks up an injury, even Acerbi, if he picks up an injury, the whole season changes completely. If Acerbi gets injured, you'll see our lineup and we're going to get lit up because we don't have that reinforcement like an Acerbi to replace him, right? Okay, let's say Acerbi gets injured, we throw in Hoed and our back line is Hoed, Luis Felipe, Patrick. Is that something that I think Fiorentina's like lineup back line could be something better than that, right? Like there's different teams and different aspects to that whole lineup where you need to have that emergency signing. It's good we have four strikers now. Even if we wanted Felipe Caicedo to go, we have that additional player that we can put there in case someone gets injured. And definitely not a bad striker. I just think that it was probably the season for him to move on, but it didn't happen. And hopefully he proves us wrong. But in the back line, we don't have that reliability. We got to pull a midfielder and 35, 34-year-old Marco Parolo to cover a spot if someone gets injured. That's where my whole iffy feeling goes to with regards to the Mercato in this season.
Go ahead.
It's iffy, man. And don't forget, there's also the winter transfer market. So
which is only like 2.5 months away at this point. Like it's active. Really coming up fast.
Yeah, we're never active on that. We always think we will be. We always sound like we're going to be, but we're never active in the winter.
Well, I think an
important aspect of this window, I think for both Lazio and Inter, and we're not necessarily grading this as part of our criteria, but keeping players. Right. Because I think in the case of both of these clubs and for Lazio, of course, you know, say what you want to about Lotito, but he balances the books very well. So there's no pressing financial need to sell big players. It's why, you know, you're able to hold on to a guy like Milinkovic-Savic because the asking price is so incredibly high. And to his credit, he's happy to stay at Lazio. So there's no need to sell him. You know, I think in Inter's case, before I grade the incomings, I think an incredibly important aspect of Inter's transfer window is at the end of the day, keeping Rajan Angolan, who I really thought was leaving. I really thought he was on his way out to Cagliari, but you know, Inter stood firm in their demand. They were not going to take anything less than 10 million euros. And Cagliari was really trying to nickel and dime Inter. They thought they could maybe get like a contract termination like they got for Diego Godin. But you know, that did not come about. Inter demanded an actual price for him. And the aforementioned Milan Skriniar, you know, a week ago, I really thought he was gone. I thought he was on his way to Tottenham. And I thought that would have been a terrible, terrible move if you were going to sell a 25-year-old center back who was playing at an elite level in the previous formation just because he doesn't fit great with the current formation, playing under a coach that I don't think is going to be around for longer than another season. So, you know, once Conte moves on, you potentially go to a back four, and I think he'd be incredibly unhappy about selling Skriniar at that point. So I hope he sticks around for the long term. But, you know, as far as Inter's transfer window goes, you know, considering the financial implications of COVID, I think if not for COVID, I would have held it to a higher standard. I would have expected, you know, a gigantic signing. But, you know, given the economic climate, I give it a 7 out of 10. And a lot of that is because of Ashraf Hakimi, who actually Lazio contained him pretty well. I was impressed by that. Has run rampant on previous opponents, and hopefully he does in the future as well. But I think that's an unbelievable signing. And I know that some people dog the Vidal signing because of his age, but I think he's already doing incredibly well and will continue to do incredibly well this season and probably the next if Conte does stick around. Vidal, he's got a tremendous motor. He's an experienced player who's won pretty much everything at the club level there is to win. And, you know, I know that a lot of Interisti are harsh on that signing because maybe they were hoping to get, you know, a 20-year-old Tonali and not a 32-year-old Vidal. But I think if you just look at them as two separate individuals, I think the Vidal signing is gigantic. I'm not so happy about Kolarov. You know, I'm not, you know, too thrilled about bringing Pinamonti back. But as a fourth striker, I think it is at least a slight upgrade over Sebastiano Esposito, who was, you know, the 17-year-old fourth striker that Inter had last year. I think given the COVID economy, I'm pretty happy overall. You know, the latest addition was Matteo Darmian, who, you know, doesn't enthuse me so much, but I think the depth is important. Bringing Perisic back, I already, you know, I'm not too happy about that, but I'm not going to consider that a new player. That was just a player that they were unable to sell. I think primarily because of Hakimi and Vidal, I give the market a 7 out of 10. And kind of on that note, let me get to our first Twitter question that both you guys can chime in on. Daniel Lucci sent this one in. He asks, out of the big five, who he considers to be Juve, Inter, Napoli, Lazio, and Atalanta, out of the big five, he asks, who do you think improved their squad the most during this market? I'm going to keep my answer the same as the answer that I had even before the market closed. And I give the very slight edge to Napoli, who, you know, most recently added Bakayoko on a season-long loan. I think that was a good deal. And I know Milan Isti weren't too happy about that because they really wanted Bakayoko back. But I think Osimhen is just a tremendous signing. I like the Romani deal as well. Even if you go back to last January, which I guess shouldn't really count, but Dembe and Lobotka were good additions. So I don't know. I think I give the slight edge to Napoli. I also give shouts to Juve and Inter because I think both of them have improved their squads. Lazio at least has improved their depth. Atalanta, I think them just keeping all their players was probably the most important thing. But what do you think, Jerry? I'll start with you. Out of the big five, which Lucci considers to be Juve, Inter, Napoli, Lazio, Atalanta, who do you think improved their squad most?
I feel Napoli have. And this dates back to January. They already started their process, and they have done a really good job addressing many areas. And Victor Osimhen is like the real deal. And anybody, I've been watching the French league for the last two seasons now, and they have the best talent. And that's the league where you go and you buy players at a very affordable cost, and you're gonna get the elite. And Osimhen is a elite player coming from Lille, however you want to call them. And anybody who has time, just watch a game of Lille and how fast they play in the transition game. Everything, they're just very exciting. They got Bamba there. Jonathan David is there. They got a lot of good players. And Osman's going to be a really standout player for Napoli. They've been able to retain and re-sign Dries Mertens. The back line, they kept Koulibaly. I think that's huge.
Yeah, you want to talk about keeping players? That was a big one.
Massive. And I think they strengthened their squad in many areas. And Lozano, I know he came from last year, but look at the transition. And now you're starting to see that at the time was a record fee signing by Napoli of $40 million, and look how he's playing there up top. So they have a lot of strength there. And I think Inter probably, I would say the other team, Inter probably is the team that has really spent a lot of money to strengthen their squad and have addressed many areas. They brought in a lot of freaking fullbacks. We'll just say that. But
I mean, you have to have, like, you have to be three deep at both fullback spots to play Conte ball. Like, when you're playing in three competitions and he runs his wingbacks like that, you have to be three deep on both sides, basically.
No, absolutely. And bringing Pinamonti back was a good idea. I would rather have him than Sebastian Esposito. He has the ability to play Serie A matches. He has the experience playing with Genoa. So I think that was a smart idea on their end. Keeping Nainggolan, I think that's a good idea. I think he will really help in Champions League. He gives him that experience, that depth.
And he always scores against Juventus, which is hopefully he keeps doing that.
Oh, absolutely. And I thought that had he gotten back to Cagliari, he would have. He was that player that I felt that they were missing against Atalanta on Sunday. That not would have helped him win the game, but kind of like made the game more competitive, give him a fighting chance, control that midfield, that composure, and that outlet pass where he's able to advance the ball, kind of step back and defend. They were really missing that kind of key player that was so instrumental and influential last year for Cagliari. And I think that's what's going to really hurt their season, is not having a guy like Nainggolan, who's kind of like a box-to-box player maybe. Yeah. I know he kind of could be, because he's just really reads the game very well and he's very tactically smart. So overall, I would say Inter. And then you got Juventus, who
They got Chiesa, Jerry. What do you think about that one?
You know what? I think they're going to use him better than Fiorentina did. Yeah. I saw Chloe Bresciofore was like ripping on him, saying that thank God he's gone. I don't think that's fair. Like, he's not being used properly at Fiorentina. He's used out of position. He's using as a wing back. He's not a wing back. He's a forward, not a wing back. He can't be playing that kind of role. He's just all over the place. They use that guy in so many different positions that he doesn't even know what his role is. So I really do believe that Pirlo is going to do wonders with him. I would say he'll put him on the left wing and put Kulusevski on the right side and probably use maybe Dybala in the middle, and then you have Ronaldo up top as a striker. So I could see that maybe, or whatever it may be. But overall, I do believe that Chiesa is going to be used properly. And I'm not a big Chiesa fan. I don't think I've always ripped on him, but maybe it's I've spoken off air with Lucci, because we actually know each other really well. And he said some good points yesterday to me, that a guy like Chiesa just needs a new fresh start, playing his role. That's all he needs. Let him play his position on a consistent basis, and then you can really judge him. Is he really that bad? And look at the talent he's playing around at Fiorentina. The last three seasons, they've been Swiss cheese shit.
And look who he's coached by. I mean, for a guy like Chiesa, who I think is going to be potentially very important for the Italian national team, to leave that guy with a loser like Beppe Iacchini is a crime.
Oh, absolutely. Their coaches are all shit. I would say their best coach was, what, Pioli?
Pioli.
He kept that team in check when Astori passed away. And then he got the boot for no reason, or it kind of went downhill a little bit. But like typical ownership, you lose five games in a row, let's fire you. But overall, I think that he'll turn his career around personally.
Well, what do you think, Steven? A big five team that had the best transfer window.
Yeah, just before I get into that, just back on Chiesa's point, I've seen a lot of things based on, yes, we know Chiesa's more of an attack-minded player, so playing him as a wing-back obviously isn't the most ideal position for him, so he's more of like a winger, I'd say. So when you look at Juventus' formation, they were playing a 4-3-3 last season. Now you have Pirlo coming in, and that changes once again. So I'm even interested to see where they play Chiesa for the time being, especially with Kulusevski in the team too. I think they're kind of two similar players. A lot of people have been saying coming off of, well, of one of the flanks, right? So and they have Morata up top now, who they just purchased. They have Dybala, they have Ronaldo. They have all those options in attack. So I'm interested to see if they're going to play him more so as a striker, behind the striker. I guess we'll have to wait and see. But with regards to kind of the five that Lucci has mentioned there, I think that I'll go from a bottom three. I think Inter was definitely one of the best. I think Napoli was one of the best, and Atalanta were one of the best due to, like you guys have both mentioned, their ability to retain, but also add players to give them not depth, but also quality. I think a big thing that I've touched upon for the past year is that Lazio doesn't have that quality depth when you look at their bench compared to different teams. We've kind of done that this season. We got Pereira was even out of nowhere. I think that he's got a lot of potential, but that's a name that people know. Akpo Akpro is someone that comes out of nowhere, right? And he's 28 years old. You look at him, you know, who's this player, right? He played for Salernitana last year, played in France for a little bit. When you look at other teams like Inter, they have a starting 11 off their bench. You look at Napoli, they're able to keep Koulibaly, which is a huge, massive signing. They're able to keep Milik as well, which is another person who they thought was going to leave. Look at their attack even, with Insigne, Lozano. It's endless up there at Napoli too. And Atalanta, Lammers, I saw that guy's goal this past weekend, which was disgusting. That guy looks like a top talent. I think he's a name that goes under the radar with regards to top signings this summer window too. So I think Atalanta, Napoli, Inter, I think those are kind of the top three. I don't think Milan's transfer window really impressed me that much. I know Ibrahimovic had that big effect, so keeping him on was definitely in the best interest of the club. But I don't think they did too much to make me consider them a top four club. I'd probably put Lazio for sure ahead of them with regards to their summer transfer window. And I think Juventus overall, Jerry's kind of touched upon that and hit the nail in the coffin with that. But I think it's going to be an exciting project with Pirlo, and hopefully all things go well. I'm a massive Pirlo fan, even though he played for Juventus. And most Italians know how good he is. So we'll see, due to his inexperience, if he lasts at the job, if people adjust to what he's going to put forward into the team. But I feel like that team's going to be one with a lot of life compared to the one that they saw last season under Mauricio Sarri, where it kind of seemed like it was a robotic scheme. So,
I'm going to add one thing on Milan that I know is going to get our Milanisti angry. They're going to label me as just being salty. Because, again, you guys know that I really wanted Sandro Tonali at Inter, and I still wish he'd signed for Inter. But you know, watching Tonali and watching Vidal over the last few games, and again, I look at it as two different classifications, short-term versus long-term. But if there really were only the financial means to sign one of them and not both of them, then I can completely understand why, you know, Conte, clearly, because he's only going to be around for another year or two, but even why, you know, why Inter's front office, because they want to win trophies this season with Conte, why they would say, if we can only have one of these guys, then it's got to be Vidal over Tonali. So again, in a couple of years, I'm going to wish Tonali was around. But for right now, I can understand why they made that decision, because Tonali is just, you know, maybe over the next couple of months, he's going to just get so much more mature. But I don't think he's quite ready to have the impact right now that Vidal is. But Jerry, I think you had another point.
Yeah, I just want to say, for the first time and who knows how long, Juventus has decided to start building their team with young players. I don't remember the last time they decided to buy a guy like Arthur, like we just said, Chiesa, Weston McKennie. They brought back Orlando Mandragora, but I think they re-sent him on loan, if I'm not mistaken, or what they did with him. But overall, like we said, Kulusevski and all these players that in Delit and Demiral, and they got rid of Pjanic, Emre Can last winter, I believe, in the winter market. Douglas Costa's gone, or he's on loan with an option, but I'm pretty sure they're going to try to sell him next season. Gonzalo Higuain's gone, and there's a lot of, like,
yeah, players. He's playing for this team now.
I think that if you take the biggest takeaway, Juventus is the best for the future. Like, they have already established in one transfer market, in two transfer markets, their future. And it's crazy how this team knows how to adjust their team. The only signing I didn't like was Alvaro Morata. I don't like him.
Kind of it felt like kind of a desperation move. Like he was their third choice at that position.
Shit. Watching him at Chelsea was so frustrating. He's such a he goes offside almost 90% of the game. Can't make his runs properly. Always falling on the floor. He's a very frustrating player to watch, because when he does score, you're like, why can't you score like that every time? He pulls off those miraculous headers and nice shots, and like he make those once in a blue moon nice moves. And I don't think he fits well with Juventus this time around. I don't think he looks out of place in my that's just how I feel about him, though.
We're gonna get through these quickly. Three more quick Twitter questions, then we'll wrap it up. I think two of these are directed primarily to me. I like this one from Gillis 15, who I think is a Milanista. He asks, is Conte happy with his squad? Finally. And then he writes in parentheses, the answer is no. It's definitely no. I got to tell you, I don't know if it's a poker face or maybe he's highly medicated by Beppe Marotta, or if part of the conditions of that big meeting that he had with Inter management a couple of months ago, one of the conditions was you have to stop talking shit after matches. But Conte he's been like practically skipping and singing Kumbaya in his post-match pressers. Like he, and with Conte, this can change from day to day, but he seems incredibly happy right now. I'm sure he's incredibly happy to have Arturo Vidal on the squad. I think that's primarily the one that made him super enthused. And of course, Hakimi at wingback, I think was a big one for him. So I can only answer the question based on the evidence I have in front of me. And Conte actually seems happy right now. I think Jerry might want to chime in on this one as well, because you did on Twitter. Nassim Footy FP asks, Alex, best Inter transfer according to you? Well, my answer is Hakimi, but Jerry, you had a different answer on Twitter.
I was pulling his leg. Isaac Kolarov is the best signing. You're
serious, by the way.
Oh man, I know. I thought I was laughing. I was like, oh no, this guy stinks, man. That is a waste of money, man. Like, just that's the guy you're gonna see finally play against Spezia Crotone. That's what you're gonna see him play.
No, you're right. And you know what? Kolarov made one of the best passes I've seen in a long time against Benevento. That cross field pass that he had in like the first 20 seconds that set up the opening goal. Like my jaw dropped when I watched that. So I think, listen, if Kolarov can do the job against, you know, the mid table or relegation type of teams. And, you know, he's a free kick specialist, so maybe you get a few goals from him out of set pieces. Then that's what I look for him to do. But, yeah, when you're playing against the Lazios and you know, the Juves and the Milans, et cetera, I don't want to see him starting games because defensively he's a huge liability. But I think he does add something.
I don't know. He was actually accountable for both goals in that game, now that I recall.
he was.
I don't know why.
The Fiorentina game, I think you're talking about.
Oh, was it the Fiorentina game?
Yeah, it was the Fiorentina. Well, actually, you know what? No, I think in the Benevento game as well. You're right.
Probably both games.
Probably both games.
He's a liability, man.
Four goals in two starts so far.
I remember last season we were hoping in the second leg that Bob was going to start against us, but he never did, and that would have really helped us because Lazio would have burned the shit out, would have burned them big time.
So I think both of you guys can chime in on this one. This is the last one. Richard Carmen from the Serie A sit-down asked, does Jerry Mancini have anything to say for himself after his beloved Lotito failed in the Calcio Mercato, asking for a friend?
I don't think he failed. I'm happy that he... You know what? It's disappointing that we didn't get that caliber center back, but I think a lot of Lazio fans have to understand there's the pandemic. Financial situation, like, things change. We're not entering a normal transfer market that we've done in the last 5 years. Who's to say that they did overspend, but their budget's smaller? They don't have revenue on tickets. They're not making cash streams in other channels that they're used to. So it's hard, right? They're not a big club like a Juventus, an Inter. Those are things that we have to take in consideration. Maybe the financial impact of signing a guy like we said Kumbula before, or whoever else they had on their radar for a center back, may have chewed their money even more and would have restricted them to buy an extra two players. And another part is we need to sell players too. So yeah, we can bring in all these players in, but we got a guy like Rizzo Dermisi who cost $7.5 million, and where is he playing right now? Nowhere. We're chewing that money up. So that if we didn't have a guy like that right now on our roster and we sold him for $7.5 million, I think it changes things. And all of a sudden, you sell a guy like Rizzo Dermisi, you sell a guy like Bastos, and you sold Caicedo just hypothetically. You got three players out. All of a sudden, you got $25 million, $20 million coming in. Letizzo's all of a sudden thinking, okay, now I can start buying players. So, and in defense, he was active. He got a guy like Pereira with an option. We don't know. Maybe he buys him. He got a striker. They were active. They committed to Inzaghi and said, we are going to buy you players. Some of the areas, yes, Steven's right. Maybe could have been addressed more. But at the end of the day, in an era that football is no longer stable like it used to be, overall, I'm happy with Letito. At least he committed to buying 5, 6, 7 players. Didn't just sell short like last summer where he just bought Lotsady. Lotsady was our main target. We got a Lotsady and Dennis Vavro. Bobby Adikani was a youth player. I don't remember who else we actually brought in other than that. Like, it was a very modest market. And in credit, the Lotsady actually was a huge signing because it actually paid off big dividends.
He's been fantastic. Yeah, I mean, I know what you mean. You wanted more. That one signing was a home run.
Hold on. Let's just say now, and I said this on another pod today on for Manchester United, where let's just say hypothetically that Kumbula, we did sign him for $30 million. What about if he didn't fit well? All of a sudden, you're going to hear Lazio fans say, well, why did we spend $30 million on Kumbula? We didn't know what we were going to say. He only had one good season. Who knows to say that he was going to have a good future? Like, there's always going to be the ifs of, was it going to be a good signing? Sometimes the cheapest signing is the best signing. We didn't spend money on Luis Alberto. We didn't spend a lot of money on Savage. We didn't spend a lot of money on Mobley. The list goes on. Leyva, Acerbi. How much did we spend on these guys? Maybe Wesley Ho comes back and he's the next freaking Acerbi all of a sudden, where he's able to adapt to the city. He's got that confidence from last year that I just think at the end of the day, give the guy a chance. You never know. I know it didn't work out with Southampton. What's to say that's the same thing? Maybe Inzaghi has proven to bring people's careers back. Luis Alberto, he brought his career back. Lucas Leyva, he got his career back. Look at Immobile. Immobile was nobody out in Dortmund. Sevilla comes back to Lazio, and this guy's risen from the dead. Like I and Patrick's. I'll use Patrick. 3 years ago, Patrick came from the La Masia, and people, I guess, coming from La Masia, the whole youth academy of Barcelona is a good thing. And I remember, I'll always remember the game against Sevilla when he got so pissed off. And he went down the tunnel when he got subbed off at halftime. The second half he started, he was pissed. He went, like, I think 5 minutes in the second half, he stormed down the tunnel, went down to the dressing room, came back out, sat on the bench. And then the fans used to boo him. And then the season after wasn't, I believe it, I was 2017-18. And then 2018-19 wasn't the greatest season either. Then last year, comes back to life. Here's a guy who played a pivotal role in Lazio's season and helped them come back into a top four. Because if Patrick didn't have the season he did last year, they don't go to the Champions League, I feel. And so, like, Basso was terrible last year. I don't think he was a good player. But my point is that you never know what you can get, like, for a bargain deal, that it could turn out to be better than what people think it is. So never say never, right?
Well, on that note, we'll wrap up this episode. And a huge thank you to Stephen K. Moore for joining us. Excellent Lazio news source. He's of the Laziali and also SKM Calcio. Did I get the name of that right? Great merchandise stuff as well, Stephen.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thanks.
I love that a lot. Anything else you want to plug, man? Any new stories or where people can find you on social media?
In social media at @S_K_Moore. Obviously, like you've mentioned, @_Laziali. And then I have a new merchandise clothing line that I'm hoping to kind of ramp up, but school's kind of taking a toll on putting time towards that. So that's on the back burner for the time being. But hopefully I'm able to get some new designs up and put them up on the store. So hoping for that. And then some hopefully new exciting things are coming to Laziali, but I can't touch upon those things as it stands right now. So hopefully the next few months I'll be able to release some more information on that.
Well, great stuff. And by the way, for those watching on YouTube, this was our maiden voyage on video. So we're hoping to get more Jerry hot takes and stuff for the YouTube channel moving forward, because Jerry's been doing a nice job with video lately as well. So make sure you follow Jerry on Twitter @JMancini8. Make sure you follow me @AlexDono. You can follow the show @CalcioConPod. And I always ask, and I mean it, and we have gotten actually a couple of new reviews over the last week. If you enjoy what you hear and you can leave us a 5-star rating on whatever platform you listen to, it really is a huge help. And if you can, and leaving the rating takes a second to hit the five stars. If you can take 30 seconds to leave us a nice review, as someone did within the last week, we really appreciate that as well. And make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel, because probably a lot of you are listening to this on iTunes or you know, Google Podcasts, whatever, and don't even know we just created a YouTube channel. You can check that out. It's just YouTube/Calcio Connection. So it's very easy to find. We'll be posting more stuff on the YouTube page as well. And yeah, we'll talk to everybody next time on another episode of the Calcio Connection podcast. Ciao.